Hi, I'm Sarah Lee, and joining me is my co-host,
Juliana.
And welcome to Murder Psyche Podcast. We also have a guest star, I guess you can say, on here.
Hello, I'm Piper.
It's our friend. She wanted to join us today. We're a podcast where we dive into old and new cases and trying to figure out why the killers did it. We are here for you every week with a new case, and if you would like to recommend any cases, you can check out our Instagram at Murder Psyche Pod or our website, Murder Psyche Podcast without the T, .wixsite.com/website. Warning, there are mentions of sexual assault and violence towards minors in this episode. Your discretion is advised. Now let's get into the episode. Today we will be talking about Rodney Alcala, aka the Game Show Killer. Rodney Alcala was a serial killer in the 70s. During this time Rodney's killings took place, the media was already filled with other serial killers emerging, such as Ted Bundy, Son of Sam, and the Hillside Strangler. Rodney was born Rodrigo Jacques Alcala Becur in San Antonio, Texas, on August 23rd, 1943.
That's nearby.
Yeah.
Oh, that's close. It's close.
Very close. His family consisted of his father, Raul Alcala Becur, and then his mother, Ana Maria Gutierrez, and his two sisters. When Rodney was 8, his family had moved to Mexico. A few years later, Rodney's father abandoned the family and the rest of his family relocated to Los Angeles. At the age of 17, Rodney joined the U.S. Army and served as a clerk. However, 4 years later, Rodney would be medically discharged after having a nervous breakdown and later diagnosed with antisocial personality disorder. After being discharged, he attended California State University, later transferred to UCLA. Here, he would brag about having a genius IQ. Rodney graduated from college in 1968 with a fine arts degree and moved to New York. Also, side note, as a way to preserve the identity of the minors in this case, I will only be mentioning their ages but not their names. So before moving to New York, Rodney was seen by a motorist luring in an 8-year-old girl into his Hollywood apartment. This girl was found raped and beaten with a steel bar. Luckily, she survived the traumatic incident and her family relocated to Mexico. After moving to New York, Rodney enrolled in New York University under the Alliance.
Alias
John Berger, and then he studied film along with Roman Polanski.
How did he just like enroll in college with just like a fake name?
I don't know. Like, he enrolled in college
this
twice.
This is the 1940s, so I know it's possible, but it's just weird to think about nowadays with such an extensive process you have to go through.
Yeah, you have to show verification of who you are, your social security number. Whereas he was just like,
I'm John Berger.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you like how old he was at this point?
He probably was in his mid to late 20s.
Yeah. Okay.
Which, that would make this about 50s, 60s.
Okay. Yeah. And for the nervous breakdown, like, do you know what caused the nervous breakdown?
They never said. They just said he had a nervous breakdown one day, which later diagnosed him with antisocial personality disorder.
I think he was abused as a kid.
Oh,
you think that was it?
That's what some theories are. There's nothing been proven, but a lot of people think that he was abused.
Okay, so continuing back, when Rodney wasn't studying film during the summer months of 1970 through 1971, Rodney was a counselor in New Hampshire under the alias John Berger. This was also around the time when Cornelia Crilly was found in her New York apartment, raped and strangled with her own stockings. In 1971, Rodney was put on the FBI's most wanted list, which led him to being arrested for the rape and attempted murder of the 8-year-old girl. After some girls from the art camp recognized Rodney in his photos and told the camp's dean. During the trial, the victim's parents refused to allow the victim to testify. This led to the lessening of rape and attempted murder charges to charges of child molestation with indeterminate sentencing. So for those who don't know, indeterminate sentencing was a program which allowed the parole boards to release offenders as soon as they demonstrated evidence of rehabilitation, if they seemed like it. This allowed Rodney to be released after 34 months, but still be on probation. Not even less than 2 months later, Rodney violated his parole by distributing marijuana to a 13-year-old girl who was dubbed Julie J, who claimed she was kidnapped by Rodney. He served 2 additional years of indeterminate sentencing and became a registered sex offender for this incident. On July 15, 1977, Ellen Hover went missing from her New York apartment, leaving behind a calendar that had the note, quote, meeting with John Berger, end quote.
Wait, so did he have John Berger and then John Berger?
Yes. Yes. Those are his two different aliases.
But does he have one as, like, a burner name? And then, like, my university name?
I don't think so. It doesn't ever seem like that. He either goes by his actual name or John Berger or Berger.
Imagine being like, I need a fake name. John Berger. It's just like a stupid...
But no one question it.
No one.
It sounds so fake. It sounds really fake.
Yeah, so Ellen's remains were found a year later. In September of 1977, Rodney was hired as a typesetter for the Los Angeles Times to allegedly cover the case of the Hillside Strangler, which a lot of people found weird because at the time he was a registered sex offender. Mm-hmm. They were like, why? He touches children. Yeah. Why is the LA Times doing this?
Yeah.
And then in March of 1978, Rodney was actually interviewed for the Hillside Strangler killings, but was cleared.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. You know why he was cleared?
They just didn't see any connections between him and the victims of the Hillside Stranglers.
Were the victims not minors or no?
I can't remember who the... I haven't studied that case yet. They just cleared him up all the charges on that case.
Yeah, so I guess it's just weird... If they were not minors, like, why would you accuse a pedophile of a not minor?
Well, who's to say he wouldn't go after adults?
Well, is that typical for pedophiles to gain more, like, confidence? And then they would go up and, like, risk?
It's possible.
For this case, it's definitely possible.
It's possible. So, on September 13th, 1978, a special episode of The Dating Game aired on television. The Dating Game was a reality TV show where a bachelorette had to choose one of 3 bachelors to go on a date with without seeing the bachelors. The bachelorette chose 1 bachelor by asking them questions. Rodney appeared on this episode as bachelor number 1 and was introduced by the host, Jim Lang, as, quote, a successful photographer who got his start when his father found him in the dark room at the age of 13, fully developed. Between takes, you can find him skydiving or motorcycling, end quote. Rodney showed off his charming personality and made many sexual innuendos towards the bachelorette, Cheryl Bradshaw. He ended up winning the date with Cheryl. However, Cheryl later refused to go on the date because she found him to be creepy. Even bachelor number 2, Jed Mills, said Rodney was a, quote, very strange man with bizarre opinions, end quote. Cheryl's rejection of Rodney is theorized to be the catalyst to Rodney committing more crimes. Rodney was connected to the dating show after he was convicted of his crimes and was found out that the show never ran a background check on him, despite him being a registered child molester at the time.
Very stupid.
That's so dumb.
It is.
One check.
Yeah.
One
check.
After the dating game, Rodney continued his act of being a successful photographer. This portrayal, along with his charming personality and good looks, made it easier for women to trust him, similar to how Ted Bundy would lure victims in. Rodney would approach women, claiming to be a fashion photographer, and ask them if he could capture their beauty to add to his, quote, portfolio. Many of the models still remain unidentified and are suspected to be victims. On June 20th, 1979, a 12-year-old girl went missing in Huntington Beach, California. Her body was found 12 days later. 1 month later, Rodney was arrested for the suspicion of the murder of the 12-year-old girl because her earrings were found in a storage locker in Seattle that was rented out by Rodney.
What's weird? How she went missing in
California
and they found evidence in Seattle.
So that meant if he did those, like he did hide them, he had to drive all the way from Southern California to
Washington.
Yeah, Seattle, which is,
well, it's like sex trafficking, basically.
Well, he's not.
What can you consider?
No, it's not. I don't think that's considered sex trafficking. I think he killed her, dropped off her body somewhere, and then he disposed of the evidence in a different state.
And because he was a photographer, it's not uncommon for them to travel, so it didn't seem like a big deal at the time.
Yeah.
Wait, so did he want to, like, capture the beauty of minors? Or did he only ask
of
minors?
Of all ages.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's
so weird. It's so weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, in 1980, Rodney was put on trial for the abduction and the murder of the 12-year-old girl. Rodney was found guilty and sentenced to death. However, 4 years later, the verdict was overturned by the California Supreme Court. The court had found that the jury was contaminated. Someone had told the jury of Rodney's criminal record, which led to the biased conclusion of the verdict. So, 2 years later, the second trial of the abduction and murder of the 12-year-old girl took place. Again, Rodney was found guilty and sentenced to death. While in prison awaiting an appeal, he wrote a book called You, the Jury in 1994. Which was a 368 pages of why he was innocent of this crime. In 2001, Rodney's verdict was overturned again by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals because a witness was not allowed to support Acala's contention that the park ranger who found the girl's body had been hypnotized by police investigators.
That's so dumb. Well, did they just not have enough, like, evidence, and they just didn't, they couldn't use just a witness as, like, their evidence?
Well, it was for him. He was like, oh, this is for my defense, and they never allowed a witness for his defense to come in.
That's so stupid. It's like,
it's also a weird defense to have a witness come up and be like, yeah, they were hypnotized by police officers, and it doesn't sound real.
No.
Like, you have, it's just all circumstantial. It's like, when did you do this?
Well, that's more opinion. Like, you can't speak for that. Please don't hypnotize. That's so dumb.
So, while the prosecutors were creating a new case, a law was passed in California that allowed them to test Rodney's DNA. Despite Rodney's disapproval, the prosecutors collected and tested his DNA. This led to Rodney being connected to 4 additional murders. So, going back in time, in November of 1977, an 18-year-old Jill Barcombe was found dead. Jill was thought to be a victim of the Hillside Strangler, therefore was never connected to Rodney. Months later, in June of 1978, 31-year-old Charlotte Lamb was found dead. 6 months later, 27-year-old Georgia Wixt was found raped beaten, and strangled in her Malibu apartment. Finally, in June of 1979, 21-year-old Jill Parenteau was found dead in her Burbank apartment. With the connection of these four cases, the prosecutors made the notion to join all the cases into one trial. Rodney contested this motion. However, in 2006, this motion was approved by the California Supreme Court. So in 2009, Rodney was put on trial for not only the abduction and murder of the 12-year-old girl, but also four additional murder charges. During this trial, Rodney acted as his own attorney.
Which is not the move.
No, it's never the move.
Don't do that.
It's very unprofessional.
Yeah.
Like, very.
And this probably shows that he is narcissistic.
Mm-hmm. So, he had told the jury that he couldn't have abducted the 12-year-old girl because he was at Knott's Berry Farm. So, Knott's Berry Farm is an amusement park in Buena Park, California. Even though there's only a 30-minute trip between Knott's Berry Farm and Huntington Beach. And that is the current time, like the time it takes to travel with the traffic in California.
Like right now. So like back then it could have taken anywhere from like 15 to 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he could have done it.
That defense makes no sense because it's easy for him to do it, go to Knott's Berry Farm as an alibi, go on a roller coaster for like a minute and then leave.
Yeah.
And it... And then Rodney also claimed that the earrings found in the storage locker were his and showed clips of the dating game to show he wore earrings.
That he wore them. Not those ones. No. Just some earrings.
He just showed a pair of gold earrings and said, I wear earrings, so those are my earrings.
Well, the earrings they found probably had that girl's DNA on them. So you can't prove. Those are your earrings.
Unless he has, like, the receipt to those specific pairs.
That's just circumstantial evidence.
Yeah, he's like, I wear earrings, so they're mine.
But they have the DNA of the girl on them.
Of a victim. Yeah. And with the other four murder charges, he made no defense.
That's weird.
Mm-hmm. In his closing statement, Rodney played the portion of Arlo Guthrie's song, Alice's Restaurant, in which the protagonist tells a psychiatrist that he wants to kill.
That does not help his defense.
So in March of 2010, Rodney was found guilty for all five charges and was sentenced to death again. After the trial, the police released many of the photos from Rodney's portfolio in hopes that some would be identified. These photos help some of his living victims come forward and identify a victim from a case in Wyoming. In 2012, Rodney was tried for the murders of Cornelia Crilly and Ellen Hoover, who I mentioned before, which he pleaded guilty to both crimes.
Which means that he also did the other crimes.
Yes.
So yeah, because his DNA is connected to them.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. He was sentenced 25 years to life. And then in 2016, he was charged for the 1977 murder of Christine Ruth Thornton in Wyoming and was suspected to have murdered Pamela Lamson from the Bay Area in 1997, but was never charged for her murder because the DNA was too degraded. However, Rodney wasn't extradited to Wyoming to stand trial due to being too ill for travel. To this day, Rodney remains alive in the California State Prison, which he is expected to live out the rest of his days. His exact death toll is unknown, but authorities theorize it to be between 50 to 130.
Wow.
Yeah, because he even has a case in Wyoming.
Yeah.
So who's to say he didn't murder all throughout the states?
I did a little bit of research about this case, and when he was younger, I found out that his dad was a bit abusive and abandoned him when he was like 11.
Yeah, that's around the age he was abandoned.
Yeah, and it was very... Okay, children who are abandoned as kids tend to suffer from trust issues and feel like they were wrong. Mm-hmm. And, like, in some way, it was their fault that their parents abandoned them instead of their parents just being assholes. But he not only felt like this, he started to distance himself from people because of his issues with his dad. And so when he was in the military, as you said, he was diagnosed with antisocial personality disorder, which is very connected to his abandonment trauma. It was like he distanced himself because he felt like no one else could do him justice.
Oh, like, so even his own father couldn't love him, so no one else could?
Yeah, he's basically, it's almost narcissistic in a way, but, like, basically no one can understand me. No one, I can't trust anyone. I only got myself.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I mean, in this disorder, it's narcissistic in a way because basically it means, as a sociopathic definition, it means your moral compass is, like, very skewed. You don't really know between right and wrong. And in a psychopathic type of way, it just means, like, you don't even care about people. Like, you do not care about people, other people.
Just yourself.
Just yourself. Well, even sometimes you put yourself in danger because you just don't really care.
Because
people with this personality disorder tend to lie and act impulsively, participate in substance abuse, and break laws, even if it harms others or even themselves.
Oh, that's interesting.
And he's considered a psychopath, which just means that because he was homicidal and he killed many people, he's considered a psychopath, and this disorder contributes to it, but it's not completely.
It's not the reason.
Yeah. Saying. Anyway, but he definitely had a tremendous criminal record with pedophilia.
Yeah, with some minors as
well. Minors as well. But he also had records of substance abuse, and he's considered a trauma victim because of his childhood.
Mm-hmm.
Some believe that he had narcissistic personality disorder, but as far
yeah,
as we
that
know,
was shown a lot mm-hmm. in The Dating Game. If you watch clips of it, he makes a lot of of course he makes sexual innuendos, but he also to Bachelor number 2, he told him, "I always get the girl." Like, he went to his face and was like, "I always get her."
This is why, yeah, some psychologists believe he has narcissistic personality disorder. They're very similar. It's just how you approach it. You don't care about people, but it's, like, a matter of, like, you only care about yourself, or do you just, like, not care about anybody? Because he was diagnosed in the military with antisocial and not, like, studied again by psychologists, they don't really know what he has. But based upon the videos on The Dating Game, they think he might have narcissistic. But anyway, initially, I think out of school, he developed a fascination with photography because psychologists think it gave him a connection to people that he didn't feel anymore. So he felt like he couldn't connect with people. And so with photography, he could because it offered some value to them. They cared about what he took. But it quickly, I think, turned obsessive. He was on his camera. They found over 1,000 photos of women and young teenage boys. Wow. And some of them is how they connected them to victims of, like, children that have gone missing.
Yeah, like, some victims who were alive came forward and...
Yeah.
That's mean, the photos.
Yeah.
And then it even convicted him of, what was her name again? Christine.
Mm-hmm.
She was one of the victims in the photos, and then she was connected to that in
yeah,
that way.
The case. So, like, a lot of it is very, like, of these thousands of photos, like, how many did he abuse? Like, that's why the count of, like, who he's killed is very unknown. Like, they do not know.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, as far as, like, murdering goes, he kind of viewed the pictures of, like, mementos,
mm-hmm.
And they fueled his sexual gratification for the cases.
Yeah.
He was a sexual, almost a sadist. He liked to prolong their deaths for as long as possible and make them suffer. and he got sexual gratification for it. But in the end, like right before they died, he liked to put them in sexually explicit poses, take their picture, keep them on his camera, and then when they died, he disposed of them.
Isn't that like a power thing?
Like a way to control his victims.
Yeah.
That's why I'm sure he went after minors for a while.
He actually had no preference. He went after boys, girls, women, and men. It was basically anyone he could overpower. Mm-hmm. If he felt like he couldn't overpower you, he didn't target you.
Were there any men or boys that came forward or that we know of that went missing?
There were definitely photos, but...
None that were, like, outrightly connected to him in any of the articles I found.
But the thing about this case that makes it interesting is his connection to media. He really liked being part of the media, and I think that's probably why he was connected to many cases, because he liked having the spotlight sometimes.
Yeah.
Because it made him feel normal. And some psychologists theorize that, like, being on the dating show and seeming like a normal guy that girls would want gave him a sense of empowerment. And that's why they also theorize that, like, Cheryl rejecting him after the show
could have been even more motive for him to kill.
Yeah. Well, because you were saying how he felt like he got a human connection with the photos, so the dating game could have been him,
like,
also getting human connection.
Yeah, like an outsider way of him, like, seeing how he interacts with these people.
Yeah.
Which is, it's insane to think that there was, like, he's a serial killer at this time, and he was like, I'm gonna go on live television.
Yeah, I think that shows that he is narcissistic and just doesn't care how he gets caught. As long as he gets, like, the thrill and the enjoyment out of messing with them.
Yeah,
makes sense.
In a way. That also could have been why he went to the LA Times, where he could have been like, they're covering my cases, but they don't know it's me.
Yeah.
He thrived definitely on having a media presence. He liked to manipulate people into thinking he was something other than he was. So, like, he was narcissistic, but he enjoyed making people think that he was a normal guy who just wanted love, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think afterwards, the rejection probably connected to his, like, feelings of abandonment.
Probably.
And, well, did a lot of the case or the murders happen after the dating show?
The ones that are connected to him, a lot of them are after the dating show. So before the dating show, there's, like, two-ish, I believe, if I can count that correctly. There's four, but he's connected to two.
Okay. But we have, like, evidence that leads to believing that he probably was involved with the other four.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So probably the rejection did set him off on kind of, like, a serial killing spree to prove that he was... I don't know, something.
That he was upset over the rejection?
Yeah. I mean, there's no way to really know, because he hasn't admitted to, like, killing the amount of people or, like, who he's killed or victimized or anything like that. It's just, like, since the only thing that we can definitively connect to, like, to him in court is DNA, that's what they use. But the rest of the cases are all circumstantial. Like, they don't know. He was close at the time, and it seems suspicious, but they cannot connect him to him.
Well, yeah, they can't connect him to him unless he outright, like, confesses to these crimes. Which, who knows if he'll do that? Because at least in Ted Bundy's case, he did that to save himself time. Whereas he already, like, he's not being sent to the, like, electric chair. So he's just like, I can... live out the rest of my days. I don't have to talk. I don't have to face an extremely painful death.
Well, how did he get off of death row so many times?
I don't think he was ever on death row. I just think he's just gonna live there for the rest of his life. But he was able to do that for, like, just finding little things, like a contaminated jury.
Oh.
And, like, he didn't get his proper defense.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third one, he hasn't been able to appeal. But even if he is able to appeal that one, he still has like additional charges that would keep him in.
At this point, he's just trying to make it interesting. He's just trying to get the spotlight again.
Yeah.
That's what it is, because he knows he's not going to get off any other charges.
Mm-hmm.
But he just wants to make a show of it to let people know he's still around.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's what's interesting with how he represented himself in court, was it might have been more just for fun, instead of like...
Or a spectacle kind of thing.
Yeah.
Instead he might have gotten inspiration from Ted Bundy.
Yeah, so I was going to say with Ted Bundy, I think Ted Bundy was generally angry at his lawyer and thought his lawyer couldn't represent himself correctly. But maybe with him, he was like, why not? It'll be fun just to mess with them the whole time.
Or like, Ted Bundy got a lot of attention for this. So how maybe I can get a lot of attention from this.
Oh, yeah.
Because if he was like an attention seeker, he also wrote a book.
Oh, yeah.
And like, a lot of people seem interested in it. So like, if you would like to check out anything we discussed, check out our Instagram and website. Over there will be our sources, photos, and additional material. Have a lovely rest of your day and stay safe. We will see you next time.